So I'm really happy to be here. I've had a very busy day. So has Samia. We drove all around the Bay Area taking care of doctor appointments. And it looks like everything is pretty fine. It's not completely 100%, but it's probably fine. So it's time to relax and forget about it and just the brace comes off in 1 month exactly. So then life goes on as before. So we're on number 21 this time. We're getting to the end. The book gets smaller and smaller at the end. Would somebody like to read it? Somebody?
I'll read it.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
21. The Buddha said, Subhuti, what do you think? Does it occur to the Tathagata, I teach a Dharma? Subhuti replied, no indeed, Bhagavan, it does not occur to the Tathagata. I teach a Dharma. The Buddha said, Subhuti, if someone should claim the Tathagata teaches a Dharma, such a claim would be untrue. Such a view of me, Subhuti, would be a misconception. And how so? In the teaching of a Dharma, Subhuti, in the teaching of a Dharma, there is no such Dharma to be found as the teaching of a Dharma. Upon hearing this, the Venerable Subhuti asked the Buddha, Bhagavan, will there be any beings in the future, in the final epoch, in the final period, in the final 500 years of the Dharma ending age, who hear a Dharma such as this and believe it? The Buddha said, neither beings, Subhuti, nor no beings. And how so? Beings, Subhuti, beings are all spoken of by the Tathagata, Subhuti, as no beings. Thus, they are called beings.
So maybe we've all noticed by now that no and not are especially prevalent in each one of these chapters. And also asking what Subhuti thinks. And also, after discussing what Subhuti might think, instead of replacing his thought with another thought, replaces it with no thought. Do you think of beings? Well, you don't have to think about some other kind of thing. You think about no thoughts, no beings. That's a big relief. It's saying that every time that we solidify our mind around some kind of idea, we can let it go. Even around the teachings, which is this what this is all about, the reality of the teaching. So this one is called not teaching what one teaches. So it's about the teaching part of it. And it's about all the questions that keep coming up. Time after time, chapter after chapter, which cover giving gifts, perfection, the nature of the Tathagata, the nature of beings, and the not and the no, like all of the Prajnaparamita material, keeps following through like a big eraser, saying, well, we have all these ideas, all these thoughts to which we cling. And any of them can be let go. Whatever Subhuti thinks, whatever he understands, there's the other side, the not and not no side. So in this case, it's about beings and teaching. We have three different kinds of bodies that we talk about, the Sambhogakaya, the Nirvanakaya, and the Dharmakaya that come up over and over as ways of expressing Buddha nature, you could say. The Sambhogakaya is the embodiment of realization, or the sunlight that comes from the Dharmakaya, the teaching, or the sun. And the Nirmanakaya is the body of the Buddha in the world, the Buddha who appears as a person in order to teach. So the Dharmakaya is the teaching. But teaching is an empty thought, and teacher is also. So although we say teacher and teaching, if we get caught by those, we make a big mistake. There is, as you probably know, the guru, so-called guru worship in Tibetan Buddhism, in which the teacher himself becomes Buddha. And it only works if it's not, accepted. It's the same thing, only they make it real so that it gets very mixed up and miserable in a way when the guru and the teacher, the teaching and the student begin to become attached to the thought of it. The truth is we just meet each other without names, without position, without identity. The original meeting of us is without anything special at all. And then, of course, we begin to paste names on it and ideas and understandings and thoughts in order to help our story along and fit ourselves and each other into our stories. All of which is a really interesting way of living our life. But if we believe it's real and true, then we're getting fixed up. So the teacher isn't a teacher. Or you could say the teacher and the student are diverse roles constantly. So one moment the teacher is a student and the student is the teacher, and the next moment it's the other way around. If a teacher appears and proclaims himself a teacher, as some people have done with full page ads in Tricycle, offering enlightenment in a weekend for $1,000, I always say run away. Better not to get caught by promises. But to sit at the feet of each thing that we meet as our teacher and let it go as our teacher. And also, as Joshu said, if we meet someone who, even if very old and wise, and we know something they don't, to be sure to share it, to be the teacher for that person. But that, too, we have to be really careful with, because if we set ourselves up and think of ourselves as a teacher, it doesn't work. And for some people, I think that's very tempting, especially because the Dharma is such a beautiful thing, and we're so, it makes us so happy that it's easy to set ourselves up as knowing something that, in a way that makes people feel small. Actually, when we speak to someone, we're speaking to Buddha himself. So we don't have to do that. So Red Pine says, no, not only are teacher and teaching empty names, so too are beings who hear and believe and practice the teachings. There's no Buddha, no Dharma, and no Sangha. As Thich Nhat Hanh said, when we can see the non-rose elements when looking at a rose, it is safe for us to use the word rose. So each thing that we meet has a non-being element as well as the being element. And if we're caught by the solidity and the form of things, then we're missing the whole picture. Says, it turns out the Buddha does teach dharmas, but Buddha dharmas, which are rafts and not ultimately real, and which the Buddha does not want us to cling to, but to use in reaching the far shore. The only dharma that is real is the Buddha's dharma body, the body of reality, concerning which the Buddha cannot teach or speak. The words the Buddha uses, says Hui Neng, are like echoes of an echo and used without thought. Unlike those ordinary people whose thoughts come and go when they teach. So teaching the Dharma isn't the same as teaching a class in math or English or biology. It isn't something that you put down on paper and outline and create for informing people, injecting information. But to reach the place where words can't reach, to point with words to the place where words can't go. It is, as you can imagine, an enormous challenge. And it is, as you know, easily distorted into lording it over people or feeling completely helpless to say anything. The only way to speak true is just to speak. And let it come from the heart and the belly. without making a plan. Those who truly, the Vimalakirti Sutra said, those who truly teach a dharma teach nothing and explain nothing. And those who hear a dharma hear nothing and understand nothing. So often people will leave a dharma talk saying, well, that meant a lot to me, but I can't remember one word that was said. And I always say, that's good. Don't try to remember it. It's not instructions from on high. It's to give you some kind of inspiration. You yourself. There isn't any other. So then, Subhuti gets worried about the future again, as he does off and on all through this sutra. He asks again, what about the future? Will there be any beings in the future, in the final epoch, in the final period, in the final 500 years of the Dharma ending age who hear a Dharma such as this and believe it? And the Buddha doesn't say yes or no to this question. He says, neither beings nor no beings. Beings are all spoken of by the Tathagata Suttī as no beings. Thus they are called beings. Six, Buddha said there are such beings. And now he says there are no such beings, and thus they're called beings. But beings don't come into being, it's the five skandhas. We're just bits and pieces all tacked together, changing constantly, aging just like a rose. Until we fall off the branch. So, you can't, if you think of a being as some solid fixed thing, there's no such thing at all. Just this five skandha conglomeration of us that is so wondrous, that actually functions in such an incredible way. And yet it's so tenuous, so very, very limited and such a short life. So Sheng Yi says, beings don't actually come into being, but are a combination of five skandhas. We just give them the name. Beings. But the name is empty because beings are empty. They're not beings. Beings don't come into being. They arise from causes. From evil causes arise beings of the three evil paths. From good causes arise beings of the three good paths, etc. But beings do not come into beings. All beings come into being according to causes. So the only dharma that's real is the Buddha Dharma. The body of reality. The whole body. which can't be seen except with the Buddha eye. And that's the other side of this expression of it, that there are all these different ways that we have of seeing things. We see things physically, we see things in a sort of ephemeral way, we see them in the formless prajna way, and the way of Dharma, and then the way of Buddha, which sees everything, sees the underlying appearance of things, and how, what's between. Our mind tends to want to go and grab, to be here and the grab there. But if we sit very still, we begin to sense that there's a between. And that between is the place where we meet. And that's the between that we cultivate in our sitting. And it's why it's so important. In the between, we can be at peace. There's room. So that's what I've got for tonight. And there's time for a little discussion.
This is totally, probably not related, but it is, because you said about remembering the subject, and it just occurred to me, like when you were done, it sounded like something. Can you hear me, Angie?
I just turned it up, so I could hear you.
Okay.
Now so, I can.
I'll summarize again. When you were just done, if I were to relate what you just said, it came to me this picture of a piece of music or a jazz piece, and you have the subject or the theme, and you just went and improvised this beautiful song, and it just ended, and that's it. And you just can't remember what it was. But I remember it sounded really good.
Well, maybe that's enough. And they're both sides to it, of course. And this project of Paramita, the material, is about the emptiness side. And I do believe that most of us have spent most of our lives cultivating the form side very intensely, and that we're out of balance. The attraction of those then, in sort of very plain way, is that we are not equanimous, that we've cultivated our intellect so well that we have lost touch with the other side. So that's why it's important to learn to listen with the other ear, analyze and our caught words, to listen with the belly, to let's go in without trying to manipulate the ideas, make them into something, but just let things be. And I think if you're hearing a Dharma talk after Zazen, then that's the experience. You just let it come in and inform you. And the kind of information that creates a new form in your experience. in verse 5, maybe. Something like.
Could you reiterate what you said about the between space? There was some words lost, and I'm not quite sure what we're between, what we should cultivate.
Well, it looks like we're confronted. Whatever is before us, and that there's you and me, and nothing in between, just space, and that if we begin to settle into where we are and attend to what we confront, we begin to see that it's not like we thought, that as we meet with each other, we're meeting in the in-between place. It's not me locked up in my body and you locked up in your body. It's between us. That's where it lives.
The relationship?
Yeah, that's one word that we give it. That makes it small.
Oh,
but
sorry.
No, no. Yeah, it's something to experience. To notice. Well, it's 8:00. Very quick, very quick. Are there announcements?
Well, we'll see you on December 10th. At 9 for Ruhatsu.
Oh, good.
More details to come.
So how is that going to be? How are we going to do that?
9 to 12. Right. And Donna Lynn is going to be your assistant.
All right.
For the service.
Good. Okay.
I have a story to tell you.
Jeffrey.
Yes. I took a bus trip last Tuesday to Reno to meet my mother. And out of Oakland, I sat next to a woman. And as we were heading over to the Sierras and remarking how beautiful everything was, our discussion turned to baking, and she was telling me all these things she was going to be baking for her nephews. And when I asked her how it was she came to be such a great baker, she told me that she had learned her trade in at Green's and Green Gulch. And I looked at her and I went, "You're a Buddhist." And she looked at me and went, "Yes, I'm ordained." And I said, "Oh my gosh." And we started talking and she told me that she knew you quite well. And it's Kathleen Guston who accompanied you to Japan.
Yes, she did.
And you know, in all the gin joints I've ever walked into, that bus had one Buddha sitting on it, and I got to sit down next to her, and we had just the best time talking, and ended up, it was the first time I bowed on a greyhound. She says hello to you, and it was a remarkably small world to have met her. It was a real, real joy. She told me some marvelous stories.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's fantastic. You never know.
You never. But I do recommend taking a bus trip now and then to fully experience what the 99% is really all about.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Everybody is on